Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Today is the last day to get a hotel room for the 2021 Western Agricultural Processors Association annual meeting and trade show. The meeting is set for June 16th through the 18th at the Monterey Marriott Hotel and the Monterey Conference Center in downtown Monterey. The hotel deadline is today, Wednesday, May 19th. The deadline to register for the meeting is Friday, June 3rd. I talked recently with Roger Isom, WAPA's president and CEO, about the conference and some of the topics that will be discussed and the excitement around the first in-person meeting a lot of us will have had in a while. So tell me what is in store for us in June.
Sure. Well, you're absolutely right. It is the first official meeting. It literally starts the day after the state opens up. So it's I think people are just excited to go to a meeting and be able to talk to other people in the industry. We also have the trade show that's going on with the annual meeting. So a lot of the equipment suppliers and vendors and that haven't had an opportunity to meet with people and really, you know, sell their product and just talk to the industry. And so this is going to provide that opportunity. We've got several vendors that are registering right now as we put that trade show together. And we have, in terms of the agenda, we have a great agenda set up. We've got well-known political columnist Dan Walters from Sacramento. He's going to give us his kind of thoughts on what's going on in Sacramento and his perspective. But in addition, we actually have two people from the legislature. A Democrat, Autumn Burke from Los Angeles, is going to be on a panel with Republican Heath Flora. And Heath is, you know, from the Valley, from the Modesto area, but he's going to give kind of the Republican view. And it won't be one of these ones where it's political partisan bickering, if you will. I think they're just really going to give their perspective on what's happening in Sacramento and their understanding of the ag issues and what we might be able to do better to try to push the ag agenda, at least at the state level. And, you know, one of the things that people see Autumn on there, she doesn't have any agriculture in her district, but she's actually spent quite a bit of time in the Valley. And she's actually been an advocate for agriculture on several key issues. So she's a friend, and I think she'll give us some valuable insight on what the industry and its members should be doing. Then, of course, we've got Michael Bocadoro from the Ag Energy Consumers Association, one of the biggest issues facing not just agriculture, but really anybody who lives in California is electricity rates. And one of the big factors, well, there's two really big factors, climate change and all the rules and regulations that the state has put on the utilities. And so what, and of course they just pass that on to us. And then the wildfires, which in some form or fashion were a cause from the caused by the utilities and some outdated equipment. Well, again, utilities aren't going to pay that themselves. They're passing that on to ratepayers. And so Michael's going to give his perspective and kind of overview of what's going to happen over the next few years, following on the heels of a PUC report, Public Utilities Commission report that came out last month that said the average homeowner in California will go from $378 a month to $570 a month for electricity by 2030. So that's a huge increase in just 8 years. And yes, that's, you know, homeowners, but it really gives an idea of what's going to happen to our members, whether you're a farmer with an electric irrigation pump, or you're an almond huller or a walnut processor. We've got some real challenges ahead. So we're going to be talking about that. And then the staff, we're going to give our updates on all of the issues that we're tackling, from water quality to air quality to labor, all the issues related to COVID, because while we are finally starting to see light at the end of the tunnel, there are still a lot of regulations in place and people wondering what to do and that. So, yeah, it's a packed agenda, but it's going to be a good meeting.
So I want to just hit on a couple of those topics that you mentioned. First off, with having the legislatures there, and I like that you mentioned we're not expecting it to be a partisan debate between the two or even between members. But I always feel that it is very good to have our legislative, you know, members of our state legislature around who don't have agriculture in their districts so that they can hear directly from the people involved in the industry. So I think that is just a great thing to have on the agenda, especially to have somebody who is interested in agriculture, but, you know, not like the rest of us, didn't necessarily grow up around it, isn't completely involved in it. So that's a, you know, what are your feelings on that?
No, that you hit the nail on the head. It's absolutely important. We live in California, and, you know, more than 75% of legislators are from urban areas. So, and then if you look at the 120, right, legislators, the 40 senators and 80 assembly people, I think there is one, well, maybe two true farmers on there. The rest, if there might be somebody still connected to ag, but they're not a farmer. And then the rest have no clue. You're not going to go up there and convince people just because it's good for farming that they need to vote that way. You've got to understand their problems and try to relate what we're facing here in the Valley or other ag areas of the state to what they're facing. So we've actually, we got introduced to Autumn by actually spending time in her district. We actually participated in a back to school event and health fair that where her district is kind of Hawthorne, Inglewood area of Los Angeles. And she's right on the fringe of some pretty, pretty tough areas. And in this back to school event, we got to see some of the you know, children and families in their district. And one of the things that really captured our attention was had 500 kids go through this health fair. And one of the things they have cancer screening, they do blood pressure checks for the parents, things like that. But one of, and they have they've got dental people there checking teeth and things like that, but they've got a vision van where every kid that goes through there gets their vision checked. And when we were there 2 years ago, of the 500 kids that went through, 300 needed corrected vision. And so, you know, you think about that, had that event not happened, 300 kids can't see the chalkboard, or maybe they can't read right because they need reading glasses or whatever. And the fact of the matter is that just diagnosed it for them. It didn't get glasses for them, right? But it's a challenge. And so how do we ever expect for them to be successful in life if they don't have those things? So it gives us a perspective of issues that she's facing, and maybe gives us a little bit of understanding of the challenges that they face and how we can maybe relate that to things that we're facing here. We were handing out pistachios and almonds, and you would be surprised how many kids opened up the bag of pistachios and say, "How do we eat this?" They'd never seen it. And so, you know, you think about pistachios and that, they don't have access to that. That's a luxury item to them down there. We take it for granted, right? We can go to the 7-Eleven, go, you know, pick up a bag of almonds or pistachios. You're not going to find that down there. And so they take it for granted. We did a similar thing with another assemblyman, Adrin Nazarian, in Sherman Oaks. His top issues, water quality. Okay, that's a big issue for us. Air quality, believe it or not, they people in their district were having a lot of trouble with South Coast Air Quality Management District. Well, that's an issue for us here. And so immediately we were able to relate and start to make some connections there. And so we've invited Autumn up to the district, actually had her tour a farm, a huller, and a processor, and actually had her talk to the employees so that they could see what was going on. And you know, is she going to vote our way 100% of the time? No, but it gave her some perspective of what the real challenges are that we're facing. And same for us. So long answer to your question, but yes, there's an incredible value there. We can't ever get them to expect to understand what we're faced if we don't understand what they're facing. Just a similar story, the Senate Pro Tem Tony Atkins is San Diego. We never think about water supply in the Delta when you think of San Diego, right? That's so far south. They get 17% of their water comes from the Delta. And so when we talk about getting water through the Delta, whether it's the tunnels or, you know, the reduced pumping, San Diego's impacted just like we are. And it was something we never knew until we had actually sat down with her and talked about it. And so it was pretty amazing. We actually found another connection there. So and we hope that by bringing to the meeting, she'll get to meet a lot more of our members and talk about the issues. And she's actually going to come the day before, so she'll be there for the dinner to meet with several of our members. She's friends with Heath, so Heath has actually brought her to the farm show in Tulare. So I met her for lunch there a couple years ago. So here's somebody, you know, that really is willing to spend the time and try to understand our issues. So it's, again, I wish I could do that with all 120, but we got to start somewhere.
Extremely important topics that will be discussed at the meeting. What are the details of the meeting and how can people get more information?
The best way to go about it is just go to, we have a separate website just for the annual meeting, and it's WAPA, WAPA-events.com. So WAPAevents.com. It has all the registration information on there, the tickets for the dinner. If you're an exhibitor, it has all the form there for you to register as an exhibitor. We're also having a golf tournament with it. So if you golf, you can register there as well. It's all right there on one page.
And how exciting is it that your event gets to be the first event? You couldn't have timed it any better, really, Roger.
No. Well, we're trying to say that the reason they made it on the 15th is because we told the governor to do so. But I don't think anybody's buying that. But it is, yeah, it's amazing that they picked that date. Because our date's been picked 2 years ago. So it was really out of our control, but just it's great. We noticed the difference in not having it last year. And really our association represents four nuts. And so there's not a lot of opportunities out there for the different segments to get together. Our annual meeting provides that opportunity and really gets people across sectors to meet and come together. And I think that's the added benefit of WAPA. And I think guys are missing that, and it'll be exciting. And for the suppliers and vendors, you know, they could go to four different meetings to get all four nuts, so they can come here and really get a chance to meet with everybody. So it's going to be informative. You know, it is definitely a business meeting, but there's some entertainment, there's some information, and really just a chance to get out there and see, you know, our colleagues in that.
Our news brief is coming up next. We'll be right back.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you. Agromiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Root Pack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Root Pack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
Here's your news brief for today. California farmers are once again in the national spotlight because of drought. And Bloomberg News is reporting farmers north of San Francisco are not participating in farmers markets or produce box programs and leaving their fields empty. Nearly all of the 11 states in the U.S. Drought Monitor Western region are suffering from some form of drought. Much of the Southwest is in an extreme or exceptional drought classification. In the Four Corners states, the last 12 and 24-month periods were both the driest on record for the region. And the Western fire season, typically that starts in the summer months, is already underway. We have more on the dry weather in segment four today. Meanwhile, the outlook for wildfires does indicate that 2021 could be another dangerous year. Stephanie Ho has the story.
2020 was a notable year for wildfire destruction.
It is important to remember that last year we saw over 10 million acres burn, 50% above the 10-year average. And tragically, in addition to the loss of life and property, we also lost 12 of our brave firefighters, pilots, and equipment officers as a result of these horrific fires.
That was Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack.
Now, that's why I was troubled, and I'm sure the secretary was troubled as well, when we received the briefing today suggesting that at this point in time, the signals and indications are that we are headed to yet another very dangerous fire year.
He had just participated in a joint wildfire situation briefing with Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, who says wildfires are related to climate change.
We owe it to the brave women and men on the front line to ensure we are giving them all the tools and training they need to protect our families, our lands, and our planet from the increasing threat of fire. To do so, we must confront the reality that a changing climate is fueling these fire disasters.
Meanwhile, Jeff Rupert, director of the Interior Department's Office of Wildland Fire, gave the latest picture as of May 13th.
Currently across the nation, right at about 550,000 acres of federal, state, and tribal nation lands have burned. This is about 60% of the 10-year average for the number of acres burned at this time of the year.
Why does he think it's going to be a difficult fire year?
Based on the seasonal outlook, widespread drought conditions, which are currently worse than they were at this time last year, will soon lead to above-average fire potential across many areas in the West.
More specifically,
these conditions will expand northward into the Great Basin, Northern Rockies, and Pacific Northwest in June, July, and August. Another difficult year is expected in California due to extensive drought throughout the entire state.
COVID-19 created extra challenges for firefighters.
The historic demands of fire year 2020 were, of course, made even more significant because we were building prevention and mitigation measures in response to the pandemic simultaneous to fire activity.
Patty Grantham is acting director of fire and aviation management with the U.S. Forest Service.
At our peak level of firefighting resource deployment last year, which happened on September 9th, over 32,700 personnel were assigned to large fires across the country. This number is an all-time record, made even more remarkable within the context of COVID-19.
That's because the pandemic reduced the number of firefighting personnel who normally would be available.
There were a lot of unknowns, but we did what fire people always do. We adapted and we overcame, putting in prevention and mitigation measures that kept infection and transmission low. This is as big a story as the sheer number of acres that burned last year.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai raised agriculture concerns with Mexico and Canada on the sidelines of the Free Trade Commission of the United States, Mexico, and Canada meeting on Monday. A readout document posted to the USTR website noted Tai engaged with counterparts from Canada and Mexico. Regarding Canada, Tai stressed the importance of Canada fully meeting its USMCA commitments, including its allocation of dairy tariff rate quotas and home shopping. As for Mexico, Tai emphasized the importance of several issues, including science and risk-based regulatory approaches in agriculture, access for U.S. fresh potatoes to all of Mexico, and an immediate resumption of authorizations of agricultural biotechnology products in Mexico. What are the career accomplishments of the new Deputy Secretary of Agriculture, as well as her goals and areas of focus in this role? Rod Bain looks into it.
In what could be considered a full career resume.
I'm very proud of my work in cooperative extension. This led to the honor of serving as Dean of the College of Agriculture at Virginia State University. In 2015, Secretary Vilsack appointed me as the State Executive Director for the Farm Service Agency. Soon thereafter, I received the appointment as the 16th Commissioner of the Virginia Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services.
Dr. Jewel Branagh's most notable position to date is now ahead of her, U.S. Deputy Secretary of Agriculture. Recent Senate confirmation resulted in Branagh becoming the first woman of color to serve in the number two role at USDA. What does she bring to the position?
What motivates me and inspires me is that with all of the challenges our farmers and ranchers and landowners face today, I have never met one who is not eternally optimistic.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, in fact, highlighted Dr. Branagh's efforts as a public servant, and through that, finding ways to help people in need. One of her focus areas will be in addressing and assuring equity within USDA programs and in the department itself.
In 1862, Abraham Lincoln established USDA. In 1864, he called it the People's Department. And I believe it should be just that, the department for all people.
Dr. Branagh's previous experiences with USDA programs will also come into play in how best to use those to serve the department's vast and diverse constituency, and address specific needs, whether it's nutrition, farm safety net, rural development, or trade.
It doesn't matter the size or the type of operation that you are. There's a program at USDA that can work to address our most critical needs that we face in agriculture today.
Improving rural economies through various resources will also be a part of the new Deputy Secretary's mission at USDA.
Our opportunity for things like clean energy jobs in rural America. There's a great opportunity in terms of supporting renewable fuels, bio-based product development, for example. Opportunities to manage our forests and grasslands and broadband infrastructure. And that helps with telehealth, with small business development, distance learning.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Lawmakers from South Dakota this week led an effort urging the Department of Justice to continue its investigation into the nation's four biggest meat packers. Republican Senator John Thune and Republican Representative Dusty Johnson also requested that DOJ provide Congress with updates on its investigation and encouraged ongoing vigilance. Two top USDA economists say strong crop prices are likely to linger for quite some time. Gary Crawford has more.
As everybody knows, prices for most U.S. crops began to rise last August.
And they basically haven't really stopped rising since that point.
USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer says the problem with last year's crops was that producers marketed the bulk of those crops before prices really caught fire. But Meyer says this crop year could be quite different.
Now there's an opportunity going forward. The market will be on edge, and there'll be an opportunity to capture more of the higher prices in their marketing. And so producers will be able to take advantage of it.
Which is why, in its first look ahead to the new crop year, USDA is forecasting higher average prices to farmers for just about every major crop, from rice with a modest 2% increase from this past season, to cotton 10%, wheat 29%, soybeans up 23%, corn 31% up from this current marketing year. So with very high prices for almost all major crops, the incentive is certainly there for farmers, not just here, but around the world, to increase acreage if they can. And so it's
not too surprising that we end up with expectations of record production for many of these crops.
In fact, USDA is forecasting just that for most of them. And USDA Outlook Chairman Mark Chekanowski says global output tends to go up anyway every year regardless. So add the price incentive to that and we will get record global crop production.
But even then, we've drawn stocks down so much, both in the U.S. and globally, that even with a fairly substantial increase in production for most of these crops, ending stocks for the new crop still remain relatively tight, so that's expected to provide price support.
Price support well into the upcoming marketing year. Now, yes, in some cases, higher U.S. prices may make some of our products less price competitive on the world market, and USDA is forecasting a drop in U.S. exports of most agricultural commodities, but that may not be a big problem. Take, for example, wheat. USDA is forecasting exports to be down maybe 6.5%. Domestic use, though, using wheat to feed livestock, up 70%. Overall wheat prices to average 29% higher. So Mark says, yes, exports are expected to slide a bit, but
prices stay high. That's all that matters.
And those prices should continue strong for quite some time. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
That's your news brief for today. We'll be right back.
The My Ag Life Daily News Report is brought to you in part by the California Walnut Board.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
House Republican leaders held a news conference Tuesday to discuss proposed changes to tax laws and their disapproval of President Biden's proposals. It started with House Minority Whip Steve Scalise.
Okay, thank you all for coming. Now, we just wrapped up a boot camp on the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. This is something we wanted to do for all of our new members who weren't here when this House Republican majority worked with a majority Senate and President Trump to pass an historic piece of legislation that got our economy going in a way that we've never seen in generations. We have about 80 members who weren't here during that time, and so we wanted to walk through just how that bill came together and how well it's done to bring jobs back to America. We brought millions of jobs back to America. We made America competitive again at a time when we were losing companies. Thousands of American companies had left the United States because we weren't competitive. We had a 35% tax rate when the world average was 23%. And all that changed when we passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And the biggest beneficiaries, and the data clearly backs this up, were the lowest income earners in America. They saw tremendous wage growth, great job growth, some more job opportunities. We had virtually no unemployment. Anybody who wanted to work had multiple companies competing for them and paying higher salaries for those families. President Biden right now is trying to unravel that success by raising taxes on hardworking families, by passing tax increases that would run more jobs out of America and cost those low-income families the good jobs that they enjoy today. We don't want that to happen, and in fact, we will fight to stop that from happening, to prevent these tax increases that would hit the lowest income families the hardest. And so with that, I want to bring up the man who wrote the bill, the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, when we passed this historic legislation, Kevin Brady.
Right. Thank you, Whip. So as Whip said, we met with our freshman and sophomore Republicans to talk through the Tax Reform Act and what it did for the American economy, more importantly, what it did for working families. The old tax code, the old broken, complex tax code that Joe Biden wants to take us back to, was almost anti-American. It slowed growth in America. It destroyed jobs. It kept paychecks flat for more than a decade. And every week, it seemed like we read about a new U.S. company moving overseas, taking their jobs, their manufacturing, and hurting those communities that were left behind. That's the America Joe Biden wants to take us back to. And there's no question his crippling tax increases will sabotage our jobs recovery. It will drive U.S. jobs overseas, and perhaps most importantly, hurt working families and our Main Street businesses. I will also tell you that by targeting America's investment infrastructure, by taxing inflation, doubling capital gains, targeting entrepreneurial income, by expanding the Obamacare taxes to small businesses, that he will weaken the ability for communities to invest in themselves. And the truth of the matter is, what President Biden wants to do is tax businesses and take the investment decisions out of a community, bring it to Washington, D.C., where Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi will decide which communities are worthy of having government investment. That will hurt families and communities across the country. So we are here with our freshmen and sophomore classes as Republicans, talking about the damage this will do to working families and small businesses. And I'll tell you, we are going to fight these tax increases tooth and nail because it will land on America's workers, our families, and on our communities. And right now, coming out of this pandemic, this is the last thing we need. This is absolutely the last thing we need. I'll point out, during the State of the Union, just sitting there listening to President Biden's policy proposals, I counted 6.5 million American jobs lost just in his address to the Joint Congress. It's gotten worse since. This is the fight that we are in it to win it, and our Republican sophomore and freshman classes are going to be helping lead that charge.
Byron Donalds, Florida House. Oh my gosh, I gave myself a demotion. United States House of Representatives, Florida's 19th Congressional District. The Joe Biden tax plan is a tax plan that only China and Bernie Sanders would love. You see, Joe Biden's never worked in the private sector. Nancy Pelosi's never worked in the private sector. I spent 17 years in the financial industry, in banking, insurance, and financial services. And I will tell you that if you double the capital gains rate, if you raise our corporate income tax to 28% like they want to do, it will make our companies less competitive. We will start to see companies begin to leave our shores again. And you will see not only companies, but you'll see Americans start to make hard choices about whether to sell their businesses or even sell their homes. That puts Washington right in the decision-making process. And I will tell you, as an individual, I don't want any of these people making decisions for me. My wife and I are actually having a conversation right now about selling our home. But if the capital gains rate goes from 20 to 40%, it's a very different conversation. That's a disaster for American families and American workers. If you want to see, frankly, black families or Hispanic families lose jobs or get paid less money, raise the corporate income tax in our country. Make it harder for small businesses to actually keep more of their money to invest in their businesses, and those families will see less money going into their home, going into their pocketbooks to pay for food, to pay for their children's needs, or whatever else is going on. You couple that with the fact that we've already seen some of the implications of this president's economic agenda. We see small business owners can't get people to apply for jobs across the United States. They're not applying because of extended unemployment benefits that we simply do not need at this point in our economy. You also couple the fact that this is the same president that wanted to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. So put this all together, everybody. Like the Democrats love talking about intersectionality. Let's bring it to an intersection. If you raise the minimum wage, if you raise regulations, if you raise taxes, how do you expect American families to actually have a job that will pay them the money they need to sustain themselves or even try to go up the income ladder? If you raise individual income taxes, all you're going to do is put more Americans into one of the most devilish things ever created, which is bracket creep in our tax code. You're going to make it worse. It's going to be harder for families to become more competitive and to go up that income ladder. So this tax plan is a tax plan that only China would love, and also Bernie Sanders, because it's exactly the things that China wants to do to make us less competitive when it comes to the Chinese. Make no mistake about that. This tax plan will do exactly that. That's why they would love nothing more than for President Biden to get his way when it comes to tax policy in the United States. Thanks, guys.
Carol. Thank you, Whip Scalise, and Ranking Member Brady. I'm Carol Miller from West Virginia. This meeting provided unity for the Republican Party to show how we feel about raising taxes. For 3 years, our small business owners, our lower and middle income workers, and our seniors all saw an increase in their paychecks and in their money that they had, and the ability to spend that money however they wanted. Mr. Brady is exactly right. This is not the time to be raising taxes. What we need to do is open our economy and allow America to get back to work. Put the pandemic behind us. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Yvette Harrell, New Mexico 2nd Congressional District. I am so honored to be here with my colleagues because they have it right. It is really so dishonest for this administration to think that raising the taxes on the American worker, the American business, and the American voter is the right thing to do. From a nation that's been locked down for the last year because of COVID and now struggling because of these harmful policies, gas prices going through the roof, all the uncertainty happening, and then to think saddling our families with more taxes is a smart idea, is dishonest, and it's wrong. And I know from my own district, 3 years ago, people were ecstatic. More money in the pocketbooks of the American worker, more money going back into the business owners, and then being spent in our local economies with our local merchants. Our economy was great. Right now, we have more jobs than people willing to go back to work because we're incentivizing people to stay home. And then thinking that they're going to have to pay more taxes, it's wrong. We need to stand together. We need to stand united for the Americans that expect more out of their government than what this administration is doing. And I'm excited to see what we can do in terms of keeping these taxes down, putting people back to work, giving people the opportunities they deserve and need in a country as great as the United States of America.
That again, the House Republicans' news conference on taxes. House Democrats did not, in their news conference, talk about taxes. They focused instead on the investigation into the January 6th attack on the Capitol. But we will watch for the other side of the tax debate and bring that to you when more is available. When we come back, we're talking about the drought and more dry weather. We'll be right back.
Having problems with nematodes? ProMax is your number one solution. ProMax is a powerful fungicide and nematicide that works to kill and control nematodes and soil-borne disease. ProMax is a powerful and easy-to-use product in your fields. WaterRight Technologies is your source for this powerful solution. Visit WRTAG.com/ProMax for more information.
Have something a little bit different than usual for this segment, but it is an important topic. The USDA is reporting on the dryness out west. A new study is showing scientifically what many people anecdotally have observed about weather patterns in the west. Gary Crawford has more in this edition of Agriculture USA.
Let's go back to 1971. That was a big hit playing on our AM car radios 50 years ago. Of course, music has changed a lot in 50 years. The differences are huge, but not surprising. But over the last half century, the weather, especially in the western U.S., has changed too. The differences from 50 years ago, quite striking, even to experts involved in documenting those changes.
I was very surprised to see that there are such large differences.
Truly dramatic change we're seeing in our own lifetimes.
Coming up during the next few minutes of our lifetimes, a look at those changes and their effects on Agriculture USA. I'm Gary Crawford. Record-breaking heat waves, withering droughts, torrential storms, record-setting floods, and devastating wildfires.
The severity of all those events and how erratic they've become is really what continues to surprise us.
That's Joel Biederman. He's a researcher based out of Tucson, Arizona, with the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Agricultural Research Service, part of a team that has just released an extensive study of how much the weather and climate has changed in the western U.S. Now, climate researchers have already shown that compared to 50 years ago, temperatures in the west are higher, rain amounts lower, and this new study just out shows
longer drought periods between rainfall events.
Much longer time on average between when you might hear this and the next time you might hear it. Joel Biederman told us that researchers compiled daily weather data from hundreds of western weather stations going back every day for 50 years. And today, compared to a half century ago,
the average dry period in each year increasing from 20 to 32 days across the west. And then in the desert southwest, the average dry period between storms in the 70s was about 30 days, and that's now grown up to 45 days.
And Biederman says it's not just warmer temperatures, not just longer periods of time between rains, but also
overall declines in rainfall. So total yearly rainfall has decreased by an average of about 4 inches over the last half century across the west.
But the longer dry times between rainfall events could already be causing some problems for crop plants and for forage plants that grazing cattle need. Biederman says most of the plants in the West can handle 20 days without rain in the summer.
Now that's increased to 32 days. That can really have big impacts for which plants can wait that long without dying or seriously disrupting their life cycle.
Or being overrun by competing non-native invasive plants that can better handle the longer dry spells. In any event, this new weather pattern means drier living plants of whatever type and much drier dead ones.
Which is a big factor underlying the frequency and severity of wildfires. So if fuels, you know, dead wood and litter and pine needles and grasses and all the things that can ignite to cause a wildfire, if they get wet less frequently, they can become much more dry and increase the chances of ignition and a big wildfire starting.
But has this actually caused more wildfires, more intense wildfires?
The short answer is yes.
Yes, this is U.S. Department of Agriculture meteorologist Brad Rippey. He echoes just what Joel Biederman said there. Warmer temperatures and longer periods without rain or snow are causing
a stressed ecosystem. For example, we've seen pine bark beetle infestations that has left millions of dead and or dying trees. So that's more heavy fuels for wildfires.
And the wildfire numbers bear all of this out.
In 2015, 2017, and 2020, we've seen more than 10 million acres burned by wildfires across the United States. That's the first time we've hit the 10 million acre mark for the United States as a whole.
And as we said earlier, longer dry periods also may be affecting the health and distribution of Western forage and crop plants. And the question is,
what will the effect be of these patterns?
To answer that, Joel Biederman and his colleagues have gone out into the desert, set up some tent-like hoop structures. No walls, just a top to keep the rain off the plants growing under there. The rainwater will be collected and applied according to these new patterns.
And we're looking at how that affects competition among different types of plants, deep-rooted plants, shallow-rooted plants. And in the future, we'd like to look at competition between grasses and the woody shrubs, which have been encroaching on our grasslands for many decades.
Now, we've only been talking about climate changes and such over roughly the western half of the country, yes, but
we do plan to follow up on this with a study looking at the eastern half of the country.
So listen for that on a future edition of Agriculture USA. I'm Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington.
That is our show for today. If you'd like to send me a comment, please email me to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. From the JCS Marketing Team, thanks for listening.